And we're back. Back for another version of Cover 2. That's Nataya J. He played. I'm Mike Hogan. I talk. That's how we got to where we are right now. He was an athlete. I wasn't. But I could talk a good game. So hopefully we can both talk a good game tonight. And maybe it has a better result than what we saw down at BMO on the weekend as Calgary came in. And unfortunately, from an Argo perspective, put together a very good second half. Argo's not so much. And it ends up in a pretty soul-crunching loss in the day because that win was there.
That win was there. It was, a better first half performance. If you've seen back-to-back first half good performances, but I started to get worried where we were selling for threes and not getting sevens because the game, you know, from Calgary's perspective, they were like, okay, you know, we're still in this, right? It wasn't a blowout type of game. And then as soon as they made that quarterback change, then they started to get the wheels turning and it seemed like it ignited the team, even though, you know, it was more the defensive side, Eli Buka's touchdown that ignited everything. They were playing much better on offense. At least Mayer wasn't turning the ball over, which was what was killing Calgary in that game. But that was such a winnable game. And it's disappointing when you lose a game like that because, you know, first half, you feel like your offense is playing well. Defense is playing lights out. We talked about it on the broadcast. Other than that, first pass of the game, they had really shut Calgary down. And other than getting a 15-yard face mask penalty by, I believe it was Achimpong, which ignited the other drive that they ended up scoring on, you know, two big runs after that face mask penalty, it was lights out defense. It was exactly what you wanted. And I kept thinking back to this coaches. They know this personnel so well. The players, yeah, no, 10 players, they know Calgary so well. So it was right there for the taking. Disappointing loss, and the second half just seemed to be killing us.
I don't want this to sound like a knock on Calgary at all, but if you hold Calgary to one offensive touchdown, you should win.
Absolutely.
Right? I mean, it's just, you know, that's no knock on their defense, but the Argos have a pretty good offense. It's sad because the big question now with the Argos is how do you finish these drives off, right? It's you get into the red zone, you get close to the red zone, and then you have to settle for three. You watch the game from a different perspective than I do. I think I watch it from a different perspective from the average fan. What do you see that's causing this team to settle for threes instead of sevens?
I think, you know, and Coach Dinwiddie's trying to do it, but there needs to be some more explosion in this offense, some more explosive plays, some more shots down the field that are hit, because it's so hard in the CFL to go 9, 10, 11 play drives, because by the end of the drive, like, both sides are tired, you know, you maybe run out of plays, things like that. But it can make life a lot easier if, you know, we start hitting some of these explosive plays, because then it's a 4 or 5 play drive. Whereas, you know, you're trying to go matriculate down the field in 8, 9, 10, it's so hard to do. One penalty, then you're all the way back, you're in second and long, and it's just that much harder to score. So I believe we're just missing that element of explosive play. I mean, obviously Calgary, the first drive, they didn't end up in scoring a touchdown, but the plays like that, I don't think I've seen that all year from the Toronto Argonauts. Like a play, Bo Levi steps up in the pocket, delivers a great deep ball to Bain, hits him in stride, and obviously a great play by McFadden to catch him, but I haven't seen a play like that. And next thing you know, that's one play and you're in the red zone. So, you know, it's just too hard to drive down the field consistently, you know, and just having to be perfect. There's only two downs in the CFL, so, you know, you maybe run the ball first down, or you get a nice gain on the ground. It's second down, and you have to convert, and you have to be perfect to continue to do that all the way down the field. So I think that's the missing element of this Argo offense, is just explosive plays and trying to hit deep shots. I mean, Coxey, playing his first game, yep, had two opportunities for deep balls. I know one was just a little bit overthrown and the other was a little underthrown, and you hit those, it's a different game. It's a completely different game. I know DeVaris, we're gonna have him on today, blitz, he had a chance over the middle and one-on-one. I think he would still be running right now. Those are kind of plays that aren't being hit by this Argos offense. And it's tough to win consistently. It's tough to put up numbers points-wise consistently. You'll put up yards from McLeod but Thompson. His yardage is always really good, but the scoring is not there right now. I think it's because of the explosive. There's no explosiveness in this offense right now.
But even it's the short stuff. Like we did the stats over the weekend where the Argos are second overall on second down and whatever. Second down conversion, second in the league. On second and 7+, they're second in the league. Second and 4-7, they're second in the league. Second and 1-3, they're seventh. Which, you know, they're converting on second downs, but they're not as successful as other CFL teams.
Yeah.
On the 1-3, which is really intriguing to me. And, you know, is this just the fact that the short yardage stuff, the line play, the running play, whatever combination it is, isn't working? I haven't broken it down past the percentages, but it's really intriguing to me why it's not working.
Yeah, when you threw out those numbers, I'm like, that is like any team converting that high of a number on second and longs, any coach would take that, you know, any day. But then you go to second and short, and a lot of the game is played on second and short, converting on second and short. You don't convert those, you're off the field. So that probably kills you more. And a more traditional offense would have those numbers reversed, right? You know, converting high on second and short, and then it gets a little bit harder. But for the Argos, it's reversed. And for some reason, that seems to be the way it's going, right? Really good. The last two games, really good in the first half, and then second half it disappears. So I don't know what's going on. And I think it's a combination of everything. Line play, obviously, you know, you have three tackles out at some point this year. That's tough. To have your best lineman, Nicastro, probably out, you know, for a longer period of time. That's tough. And then Andrew Harris, he's out now, but you know, even when he was in, it wasn't great, but it wasn't, I don't think it's all on one person or one thing. And, you know, they kind of fixed those issues this week. I thought Chad Kelly did a great job setting up those outside runs, right? Softened up in the middle. They went to it one too many times, we saw, but you know, now it's teams have something to prepare for. So I'm wondering if it's going to get better now that they've shown different looks going outside.
It should soften up the middle a little bit.
What's that?
Like, it just should by nature,
yeah,
soften up the middle a little bit. How much, I don't know, but those ends, those outside guys have to now be very aware of setting the edge,
right?
Or Kelly can run around the corner for 20 yards,
right? And that's linebackers aren't just jumping over the pile because they know they gotta scrape and find him, he could be anywhere. So
second longest run the Argos have had all year was a quarterback sneak.
It just makes you laugh. You just got to laugh.
Like, it does. I mean, the leading receiver for the Argos last week was A.J. Olette.
Yeah.
I mean,
for his first start.
But just, you know, when you think of receivers, you know, we think of divas like you. You don't, A.J. does not look like a receiver because he's not. Not too tall, extremely wide, extremely muscular, fast running back. Like, he's a bowling ball.
Yeah,
you don't think of that as being a pass catcher, but hey, it was there, and they took advantage of it, and it worked. And unfortunately, he had the fumble on what was a perfect punch out. Like sometimes you tip your cap to the opposition. That was just a play that 99% of the time the guy's going to cough it up. Yeah. Unfortunately,
he had great ball security. It was tough. Yeah.
It was just one of those things. It's going to happen. But that seems like, you know, right now, and I'm sure there's going to be a stretch of the season where everything the Argos do is going to go well for them. Right now, it's one of those stretches where, you know, I still marvel at the fact that they lost in Hamilton. When you look at the statistical breakdown, when you look at everything except for penalties and return yards, Argos dominated that game.
Oh, yeah.
And yet, somehow Hamilton, with a passing attack that didn't hit 200 yards, and you know, the backup quarterback is your leading receiver or leading rusher, puts up 34 on that defense without scoring a special teams or defensive touchdown. Yeah. That made no sense to me. Here's the other Calgary. Maybe you can speak to this. In Calgary, we talked about this going into the game. Okay, you keep it close, and in the fourth quarter, because Calgary's coming in here not having practiced in humidity, advantage Argos in the fourth quarter, right? I mean, I talked to the media guys from Calgary on Thursday, and they were complaining, or on Friday, and they were complaining about the humidity, and there was no humidity. So, I mean, and time of possession was like plus 10 minutes for the Argos after three quarters. Like, there was everything set up for, okay, the Argos are going to dominate the fourth quarter, and they didn't. So let me ask you, is that a fallacy that players get tired in the fourth quarter if they've been on the field too much? Now, it might be different for a defensive player than an offensive player like you were.
Yeah.
But do you buy that?
Yeah, I do. I've seen it happen, especially on long drives where a team goes on a long drive, then, you know, the other team goes two and out, and then the defense has to go back out there. That for sure I've seen, and especially in humidity, it just intensifies that much more. But the problem with the Argos is, at, you know, midway through the third quarter or starting, they started going two and out like maybe four or five times in a row. I felt like that saved Calgary. That just didn't allow their defense to even get tired. I mean, you're on for two plays and you're on the bench, you know, sipping Gatorade, and you're back recovered. So they let them off the hook a little bit in that middle of that third quarter and head into that fourth quarter. It's just offense did not have a rhythm. They did not have anything going. Kept looking for that spark to get them going. It just never happened. I thought the Deshaun Amos interception, you know, in the end zone would fire them up, and they come back out and it's two and out, and you're like, okay, they just don't have it this game. Like, what's going on? So it's just, I felt like, you know, Toronto really let them off the hook. I thought the humidity would play a huge factor, especially when you mentioned that, you know, Calgary hadn't been in any type of humidity all year long. It takes a while for you to get your win, but Toronto just didn't take advantage of it. Yeah, it was on the offense, I felt like.
Well, it was a frustrating game. The crowd was spectacular. It's amazing how loud that building gets.
Oh yeah.
You know,
it's noise. I love how the sound hits off the roof and back down.
And we're up at the roof, so it catches everything, and we can hear it up top. I can just only imagine what it's like down at field level. But the fans are bringing it. It was a decent crowd. We can still do better. I expect a better crowd on Friday night, 7:30 against Hamilton. It's too bad. I mean, it was too bad a couple of weeks ago that the game was on a Friday night at 7:30, which makes it almost impossible unless you take a half a day off work for Argo fans to get down to Hamilton. Conversely, it's going to be, especially with the CNE, unless you're taking the GO train, it's going to be tough to get in. So again, I can't stress enough, take the GO train or public transit to get there. It was pretty busy after the game getting on the GO train to get back to Whitby, but they were able to sardine us in at least until Union Station, when a good chunk of folks got off, and then it was pretty smooth sailing after that. But parking is expensive, it's scarce, it's park in Liberty Village if you can, if you don't want to pay the extra bucks, or just make sure you can get to the game. GO transit is my suggestion. You know, drive down to the Scarborough or Eglinton or Mimico or, you know, Oakville Station, and come in that way. Come in on the Lakeshore line, drops you off. Go to the GO train website. There's a $10 pass. So if it costs you more than $5 each way, you can get the $10 daily pass. Like for me, it just cuts my fare in half from 20 down to 10. So can't stress that enough, because we want to get down and see Mickey Donovan, coach special teams. We'll talk to him in a couple of minutes, and we'll come back with Devaris Daniels. Maybe we'll get a little talk about Manti Te'o in there as well when we continue with cover two. So it's time for our first guest tonight. Mickey Donovan will join us in a little bit, but let's go to the receiving corps. Devaris Daniels on the line. How you doing, sir?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
Good. Okay, tons to talk about here. First thing, I'm an Eagles fanatic. Your dad played a long time in the league, but your dad got a ring with the Eagles. Yeah. As a family member, I watched the Eagles for 50 years before they won. What was it like being a family member when your dad got that ring?
It was honestly like my dad, he played 15 years in the league too and never sniffed a win in the playoffs. So like just to be in that moment, just to be at the Super Bowl was already like the biggest deal for us as a family. Now going against the Patriots, you know what I mean? It was a tough task at hand. So like, you know, it was up in the air if we were going to win or not. But, you know, once we, you know, once I think it was Brandon Graham got that sack at the end and kind of sealed the game. And, you know, that being like my dad's position and like, you know, the group that he coaches, it was so special, man. And like, as soon as it happened, I just remember running down to the little tunnel, trying to get on the field as fast as I can and get there with him. And, you know, running out on the field after, you know, the bell had sounded and trying to find my dad and seeing him there, like just standing alone, like looking for us. And it was just like that moment that you always see it, that you always hear about. It's like, you know, right after the Super Bowl, the first thing you want to do is find your family. And he was looking for us. And, you know, he finally got that ring, you know, not playing, but coaching, which is something that he's always wanted to do. So it was very, very special for him, very special for us. The moment can't really be replicated at all. So
did you go back to Philly for the parade? Because that was insane.
Oh, yeah. It was like 2 million people or something. I was there. I was on the float. Got to see it all. You know, I mean, I was up there acting like a player at the time. It was fun, though. It was fun.
Hey, Didi. So nowadays, I know I'm getting older because I'm seeing all the dudes I remember in the league. Like, their kids are, like, in college or in the pros or whatever, right? Even, like, LeBron James, like, both of his sons are – one of his is about to enter college right now. So for you, I want to know what's like playing for, you know, a man, your father that was in the NFL. And, you know, obviously you want to be a football player. You looked up to your dad. Like, what's that like? Because I was growing up, my dad didn't play in the NFL. I was like, man, it would be so cool if my dad played in the league. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'd be able to go to games and, you know, get all these tips. But what's it like being in little shoes of to have a dad in the league?
For me, man, it was like, it was just everything. It was all I ever known was football because they had me when they were 19. So, you know, I saw every bit of his end of college to professional career. You know, all I've ever known my dad to do was play football. So, like, that was the first thing that I've ever wanted to be was a football player. And just to have him around just to kind of show me the ropes and really just, I think the main thing I took from him is just how to handle yourself on that stage, on a big stage like that in front of, you know, in the public eye type thing. And yeah, man, it was from day one, I knew I wanted to play football. And my dad is a big, you know, big, strong, you know, meaty guy. So he was on the defensive line. I'm nowhere near, you know, that type of body type. So I had to stay on the offensive side, which, you know, I'm happy about. I get a little bit more glory than he got. But, you know, it was fun, man. It was great growing up. It was, you know, it made my life a whole lot easier.
You would have had options on places to go and play. I'm sure he was trying to recruit you to Georgia, where he went. But you chose Notre Dame. Why did you decide to go to South Bend?
Honestly, the whole time I was waiting for the Georgia offer, just to be like my dad. It was the school that I always wanted to go to. They were a little late in the recruiting process outside of, you know, the state. They love to do, you know, in-state and like Southern guys first. And then kind of branch out. But, you know, it just wasn't sitting with me right that they weren't coming right away, even though I was a legacy. So from there, my next first choice would have been Miami. And I was probably 10 minutes away from committing to Miami. And I got a call from Coach Martin at Notre Dame. And he was like, hey, man, like, I don't think that's the best decision for you. And then I was real close to him at the time. So I looked at him as kind of like one of my mentors, like people that I would definitely take advice from at the time. And he was just like, I don't think that would be a good decision for you. And he talked to me about Notre Dame and you know, how it would be a 40-year decision, not a 4-year decision. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of – and it was close to home for me, so it kind of made sense. Because I'm a mama's boy. I don't want to be too far away. So basically, that's all that happened. I was literally 10 minutes away from committing to Miami before a coach called and told me not to do that.
Didi, what is it about Notre Dame? Because I remember, obviously, I watched the movie Rudy, And I watched, you know, all these things that, you know, they're on primetime all the time. So, like, they might not be a lot of college football games out, but Notre Dame was always on. So I'm like, for me, I'm like, man, that it would be so cool. You see the stands are full every single game. It looks like an amazing place to play football. So, like, and I just watched the documentary. Matt Tateo was like, you know, he wanted to go to USC, but then, you know, Notre Dame was, you know, his calling. Like, you know, obviously you watched it too. He talked about, but I want to know, like, what is it like to be a football player at Notre Dame? Like, explain that experience to me.
To be honest with you, I had kind of the same feelings that Manti had when I first got there. It's like, man, I can't believe that I chose to come here of all places. Because, you know, growing up, like I said, I wanted to go to Georgia. I wanted to go to Miami. And I hated Notre Dame. And, like, all my friends, I'm in the Chicagoland area. So all my friends, they love Notre Dame. So it gave me more of a kind of a hatred for them, you know, growing up through middle school and high school. And but once I got there and I got to meet the people and got to meet, you know, my classmates, people that were, you know, going to be joining in on my class, my recruiting class, the coaches, just being around campus. And like I said, it was close to home. So it just made sense to go there. But once I got there, it was just, it's magical. It's hard to explain because it's like the only one of its kind. You know what I mean? It's like you show up on campus and you see the golden domes and all the tradition and all the, you know, the throwbacks, you know, you got Rudy, everybody watching Rudy growing up. Rudy, he coming through the locker room just to, you know, say what's up. And it's really like you get a lot of stars. I think we had Vince Vaughn come on the sideline. We had Austin Collinsworth's dad. He played in the NFL as a receiver, so I knew him from before. We had Corey Robinson, the Admiral. His was his dad. Who else? We had everybody. Torrey Hunter Jr. We had everybody on the team. So it seemed like the right place to be for me as, you know, somebody whose dad was in the public eye as well. But, you know, just the campus in general, it's one of a kind. It's hard to explain to people that haven't been there before. But, like, you definitely have to check it out and experience a game there because that game day is very different.
Okay, Nate brought it up. I'll follow up before we get to Argo's stuff. He's watched the documentary on Manti Te'o. So have I. I assume you have as well. What did you think? And is there anything you want to say that maybe wasn't in the documentary that maybe would have made it even people feel even better about Manti?
Yeah. I would say, well, first of all, you know, I mean, I made a little cameo in there. So if you get a chance, see it, go ahead and check me out a couple times. But I would say, man, for the most part, it's just understanding that, you know, the Manti that's talking on that video is like the Manti that everybody knows. That has spent time with him, that everybody knows he's a great dude. Like the only thing I remember about Manti is that he always wanted to laugh. You know what I mean? He always wanted to have a good time and just be around everybody and just have a good time. And, you know, for the most part, you know, up until that last season, that's how it was. That's all I knew about Manti, is that he was a great linebacker. And he was a great dude. And then, you know, all that kind of happened. And honestly, it was the wildest thing I've ever been a part of. But, you know, just watching the way that he handled it and not knowing, like, you know, how deep it was about to get. Like he handled it very well from the very beginning. You know, to lose anybody, you know, to lose his grandmother and then to think that he lost his girlfriend at the time, like that had to be tough on anybody. So just the way that he handled it was very, very great. And I really have nothing bad to say about Manti. It's just unfortunate that things happened and he was kind of under the public eye in a negative way for a long time. And I'm just happy that he finally got to tell his side of the story.
You know, it's interesting that you say that he handled it well, because it seemed like the whole time, like, you know, throughout when it first came out, he handled that well. When, you know, the second part came out, he handled that well when it was revealed that it was a hoax. And then like this next part where he's forgiven everybody that was part of it. Ronnie, he like that takes a lot. Yeah, I don't know if a lot of people could do that. So it made me feel like, man, he might be a really good dude because every step of the way he's trying to do the right thing. I want to ask you though, like, what is it like to be in a locker room with a guy that is not just a great football player, but he's like almost, I don't say he's above the team, but he's a rock star. I remember talking to Darrell Walker while playing with Johnny Manziel, and he was telling me he was really like living like a rock star lifestyle, right? Not going to class, you know, and getting everything from anywhere, right? But yeah. Like very few times, you know, these generational guys come around. So like, what was it like being, you know, teammates with a guy like Manti? And if you could share some that we don't know about him, that'd be cool. Probably he's probably his life is so open, he probably can't, but just, right. Yeah. Well, what was it like being a teammate with Manti?
I would say it probably wasn't on the scale of Johnny Manziel, even though he was on that scale, because Notre Dame is, I think it was like at the time, I don't know if it was grown since then, but it was 8,000 undergrads. So it was a very small like community of student body, right? So everybody seemed like they were pretty close. You get to see these people all the time, hang out with these people all the time. And for the most part, like, you know, Manti was very level-headed. He didn't come, direct like, hey, I'm this guy, like I'm this, you know what I mean? I'm first round draft pick, I'm this, that, and the third. I mean, he was very humble. He was very, like, his parents definitely raised him right. He was, you know, just the average guy. Like, anybody could come up there and talk to him and he would have a conversation with him. But on game day, that's when you would see the difference between Manti and everybody else at that time. Cause, you know what I mean? He's running out the tunnel. Crowd going crazy. It's all number five jerseys. Usually it's number 10 because, you know what I mean? That's just like the Notre Dame thing, number 10. Yeah. But nah, bro. This year, his senior year, it was all Manti. Manti this, Manti that. Every story, even if you had a good game, they want to talk about Manti. They want to ask you about Manti and, you know, this, that, and the third. And then to be, you know, up for the Heisman, to be, you know, number one team in the country, to be going to a national championship, you would think that like the spotlight would get to him at some point. But I could tell you, like, at no point did his demeanor or did his personality change. Like, he was literally the same person from the time first time I met him to, you know, the last time I've seen him walk up out of that stadium. So but you could definitely tell the difference on game day. Cause everybody wanted to talk about Manti. That's when you get all the, you know, news companies coming in and all the stories and Sports Illustrated and all this stuff. But, you know, on a day to day basis, man, he was just a regular dude. You know what I mean?
And, so it was cool. You guys did get to a national championship game. You put up some numbers in the national championship game as a sophomore. So, you know, your career leads you toward Canada, where you had the honor of playing with Nateah Jay. I mean, that's, I mean, forget Grey Cup, man. That's the pinnacle there. But now in Toronto, you've got a good group of receivers. Ball is pretty evenly distributed. Targets are pretty well distributed. For a guy like you, is that the way that you want to get going? Or, like, how do you feel you're fitting in the offense?
For me, I've always felt like, you know, in order to be successful, you can't be the only one. I feel like, you know, football is the ultimate team sport. So if you can get, you know, as many guys on the same kind of level playing field, or, you know, you can spread the ball around enough to everybody that can't really key on one person, and it makes everybody's job just a little bit easier. So I've always been a fan of that. I love the fact that we can spread it around. I love the fact that we have all these ballers and we can do, you know, a whole bunch of things. But now it comes to a point where you have to try to put that all together. And that can be tough when you have so many playmakers as we do. It's, you know, you don't want anybody feeling like they're left out at all because they can all ball. And I think that's a tough task and a tough, you know, ask on trying to figure that out for coaches, especially, you know, if they've never had this caliber of team before. And you know, it's a process for sure that we got to learn, but I think we're starting to handle it the right way. So you know, hopefully we could just get some wins behind it to to show for it. But I love the dynamic of our team for sure.
Hey, Didi, Chad Johnson had a viral video talking about his experience coming to Canada and what it was really like. And I felt like a lot of people needed to hear that, because I always say there's so much talent in Canada, and it just, it gets a bad look just because, I guess, the salaries of the players, or, you know, the number of fans that show up, things like that. But I want to know what your experience was like, you know, from the jump when you first heard you were coming to Canada, and kind of through now, because, you know, Chad said it perfectly. And I'm sure, like, a lot of players, you know, kind of go through a similar transition when they're coming here. They don't understand what this game is like and the kind of caliber athletes are here. I'm interested to see, to know your experience coming up here.
So when I first, you know, made that decision to come up here, it was a lot like the Notre Dame decision. I wasn't really, you know, happy about it, just because I grew up, my dad played 15 years in the NFL. So, like, NFL was all I ever known. And, you know, I heard I was going to Calgary, and I really thought, I didn't know that was in Canada. I thought it was in Europe somewhere. So I'm, you know, I'm shocked already. So I get up here, and, you know, I'm at the rookie camp, and the first thing I notice is that there's some names that I've heard before. I had Joe West on my team. I've heard his name. I learned a lot from him. And then, you know, kind of over the course of time, you see a lot of NFL guys actually come up here and not be successful. So I think that's kind of telling in itself. You know what I mean? And, just the layout of football, man, there's so many players, but so many few spots that, you know, can be filled. So it is the NFL, and I think the CFL is like that second league. It's like the NBA G League, for example. But, you know, like I said, there's a lot of players that have played in the NFL that have been first-round draft picks that have, you know, stuck in the NFL for a while and then came up here and just can't figure it out. It's like a totally different game for them. So the talent level is definitely there, and it's always been there. But like you said, I think just the money situation and, you know, kind of being in Canada in general, where football isn't the number one sport, is like probably four, behind like soccer, baseball, and basketball and hockey. But, you know, for the most part that I've seen, the talent level all across the board is the exact same. Yeah, I mean, it's a different game, so you get a different look at, you know, how people use their talents. But there's a lot of talent up here, and a lot of people that deserve to be in the NFL. But, you know, by the luck of the draw, you know, I mean, it's CFL for them.
Well, we're happy you're here, and we're looking forward to you lighting it up in the second half. And I just, after the Calgary and Europe thing, please tell me you didn't take geography as a major.
Not at all, man. Not at all. It shows.
Thanks for doing this. Really appreciate it. And go get Hamilton, will you? We're sick of losing to those guys.
Oh, yeah. We'll do it. I appreciate you guys.
I appreciate you, Didi. Yeah, some more of what you did on that sideline, you know, to a couple of dudes, you know, taking angles. We need more of that.
For sure.
Well, that was DeVaris. That was interesting. The Manti Te'o stuff, we can talk about that a little bit later on. But we have another guest all ready to go. Special teams coordinator, Mickey Donovan. How you doing, Coach?
I'm great. How are you guys?
Awesome. How are you liking Toronto? You've been around the country from about 15 different, mostly Montreal, I guess, at different levels. But what do you think of Toronto?
Oh, I've been enjoying it ever since I was able to get into our place here in the city. I'm loving the city life. You know, I was in Montreal. I thought that was a pretty nice city. but now I'm in, I think, the best city in Canada. So I'm enjoying my time.
That's a great answer. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of people around Canada, you know, they hate Toronto for certain reasons, but when you're in it, you love it. There's so much to do. But Coach, take me back to 2001, 2002. All right. You're a sophomore at Maine, and you leave there full ride scholarship to come up to Concordia. You follow your high school sweetheart to Quebec. So what were your friends saying right now? Because it worked out, obviously, professionally and off the field in your personal life. But what were your friends saying at that point, you know, leaving a full ride scholarship to go up to Canada?
Yeah, well, you know, and there was other things. My brother was at Maine with me, and due to academics, he could not get a full ride. So at first, the thought was to go back home and go to UNH. But at the time, my head coach would not sign my release form because I was on a full ride. So, and it was an in-school rival in the conference. So my wife was the one that said, well, why don't you just come up here and play? And at the time, I was kind of surprised. I'm like, they have college football out there? So, you know, a kid from New Hampshire not knowing the country just right above them, I felt pretty stupid, you know, because what a difference and what a place that is so unknown to some Americans, for someone like myself that really never got out of the state of New Hampshire, didn't know what was really up north here.
Well, Tavares thought Calgary was in Europe, so you got him. At least you knew Montreal was close.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when I was a kid back in the 80s, we took a trip up to Montreal, and I could, you know, just vaguely remember the trip being in a van and playing with my toys. That's pretty much about it that I can recall, going through the border like at 2 a.m. And I, you know, again, I didn't even know what was going on, but besides that, I, you know, we never, you know, in school, you don't study or talk about it too much. And then for myself, just being naive and not caring about anything else, but high school football and baseball while I was there, I didn't really venture out anywhere else, but the state, you know, even to know about Maine, I knew of Maine, but I didn't know about Maine black bears, you know, at the time. So it's just, you know, someone that really hasn't been shown what's really out there in the world until you get that opportunity, right?
It's funny you mentioned, you know, not remembering much as a kid. There are a lot of adults who go to Montreal and don't remember much after a weekend. You having coached in both Concordia, you played at Concordia, coached there, coached at McGill as well. How difficult is it? Like, what do you have to do as a coach to make sure that your student athletes, late teens, early 20s, enjoy the experience of Montreal, but don't enjoy the experience of Montreal too much during the season?
Yeah, you know, one thing I found with all student athletes is they need to be on a schedule. They need an everyday routine that they're able to follow and stay strictly on it, because if they don't have that, that's when you can start losing student athletes to them not showing up to class because of the nightlife that's out there in the city. And it does get dangerous because, you know, at the time when I was there, you know, we were having a hard time getting the top stage up guys. And even for Ontario kids or kids from out west to come to Concordia or McGill. But when my brother and I, when we were able to get back at Concordia, we really focused on bringing the Americans up. And to them, you know, Canada was, you know, again, just like my shoes. They didn't know much about it, but we were able to, you know, share our story and our experience and the time, you know, that we had at Concordia. It really took off because we were able to get about 18 Americans on our roster. And a lot of those guys were able to walk away with, you know, university degrees. And at their time, you know, some were pulling them off of the NCAA rosters. And for others, they were coming out of JUCOs. And now that the CFL opened up that new rule for Americans to come up and play 3 years and have the Canadian tag on them for the CFL, it just opens up more doors for Americans to come north, just like it's opening up doors for Canadians to go south to play.
Coach,
I was just going to say, before we leave youth sports, you were with Greg Marshall at Western for a while, and I was talking to somebody about Chris Bertoia and Greg Marshall being on the same staff for a while as recruiters. Chris is now at Waterloo, for those who don't know. And I can't imagine a family saying no to either one of them. And I mentioned Bertoia, and somebody said, you should have seen Mickey as a recruiter. if there's somebody getting into coaching at this stage who, at the university level, recruiting is everything. You know, you can coach, but if you don't have the tools, you're done. What's the key in your estimation to being a good recruiter at that level?
I truly think, you know, you got to understand the time commitment that you're going to have to put in. And besides the time commitment, it's really, you know, caring and wanting to be supporting of the student athletes when they do come. And just telling them and selling it to them on the recruiting trip isn't good enough. So when you actually are able to show that you care and you're able to be there for the student athletes at any point in the time in their career, you know, those guys will, you know, they'll tell the recruits when they come in, the players tell them that, oh yeah, you know, what Mickey says he'll do, he'll follow through with it. And I found, you know, sitting down with the parents and telling them honestly, you know, that it's not easy to let your kid go off to you know, to school, but anywhere, even across the country to go to Western at the time, or for any school for that matter, you know, it's having them understand and knowing and believing that their kids are going into a program, not just to be a football player, but to be looked after, mentored, and, you know, turned into a grown, good-hearted person that will come out with a university degree. You know, my thing was, if this was my son, this is how I'd want to treat them. You know, if my son was going somewhere, I'd want to make sure that they're going to be treated the way I would want my son to be treated.
Coach, you're a guy that played on both sides of the border. You coached on both sides of the border. All the guys I talk to say you're the ultimate player's coach. So what's the key to being that player's coach that, you know, guys could, you know, talk to and have that trust in, and or guys that, you know, even stuff outside of football, they know that, you know, you're there for them. What's the key to that?
Well, you know, I always try to be honest with everyone. And then at the same time, you know, I'm there for everyone. You know, like I would want, if I was ever in a situation where I had to talk to someone and I needed someone to lean on, I hope I could go to anyone in our organization to do that. You know, it's not just that I don't feel like I'm just a coach with these guys. You know, we're spending so much time together. I care about everyone, even the guys I'm working with. You know, it's something special when you're able to build relationships, you know, in our lifetime, and not knowing that person too well, but getting to know them really well and knowing what they're about, you know, with some issues or not issues. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're all human beings. We all need someone to talk to at times, positive or negative. But it's always good to hear someone out, because sometimes, you know, just listening to someone can really help them.
How would you, I mean, if we look around the league at special teams coach, you know, Mike O'Shea, I know, knows the rule book better than any referee, and he's the guy who's going to look for loopholes. And when Jeff Reinbold was here, he was the mad scientist. He would take what was there, and he would go to the well often, and more often than not, it would work. How would you describe what you want out of, let's just call it a Mickey Donovan coached special team unit?
Well, you know, I don't know. I, you know, as a coach, I like to see my players, you know, one thing I tell my guys all the time is that when the camera's rolling, the eye in the sky is their resume. They're putting their resume on the field each and every day, if it's practice or in the game. And one thing I want them to be proud of is that when someone turns the game film on or the TV on, they're watching them. I want them to see that there's a lot of effort and pride in what they are doing. And, you know, by them just playing at that tempo, that when people see our Argonauts special team guys fly around and play with, you know, energy that can't be described, that's what I want, you know, my special teams to be known for. You know, it's all about effort. If you don't care about playing, especially on special teams, you're not gonna make a statement. You know, the biggest thing, you know, you talk about Mike O'Shea and Jeff Rumble. Those guys have been some unbelievable special team coaches, and you know, you can see what's going on over in Winnipeg and what O'Shea has done there. There's more than just coaching that's going on with Mike O'Shea. And I think if anyone knows the guy, that, you know, he'd take his shirt off his back and give a hand to anyone, you know, I'm sure in that town, for that matter, or anyone that he's ever met. You know, and I respect that. I think that in another way is how sometimes you get people to respond to bring out their best ability. You know, if you're a guy who's grinding players all the time and you're not, you know, giving them a chance to express themselves or even listen to them, you might not get the most out of them because they don't feel the respect is there. You know, so I think, again, for myself, you know, you always want to play around with the rule book and see if you can finagle different things. But I always try to play within the guidelines of the book. You know, do what's asked, teach what's right. And at the end of the day, if we can play with a high energy and great effort, a lot of good things can happen.
Coach, I was a guy that the first time I ever covered or kick or had to tackle someone, it was in the CFL on special teams. And for you, you're dealing with a lot of guys that the first time they're doing a lot of these skills that are asked of them in training camp, it's at the professional level. And obviously you coached it and at the U Sports level, and you've seen like star athletes when they first come to the CFL, the way to make an impact is on special teams. So how do you get guys to buy in to, hey, you're not going to be a starting linebacker or a starting safety when you first come up here. You got to do it on special teams. How do you get guys to buy into that mentality?
Well, you know, a lot of them that come up are, you know, for Americans or Canadians that come up through the U Sport level. I think, you know, for them to buy in at first, they all want to be there. And if when they start realizing as you're going through camp, how important special teams is, because they don't know when they first get there. You know, we talk about it in the meetings. It's one of the first things I talk about. You know, if you guys want to make this team, this is what you got to do, you know, and it's not just myself saying it, you know, Coach Ryan Dinwiddie has done a great job as well. And given that extra voice in the meeting rooms on that side of it, that, you know, special teams is a third of the game. You know, if you can win that part of the game, we only got to win one more part of that game. And usually you come out with a victory. So everyone's dialed in and everyone has to be a part of special teams. You know, it's the one position that you're able to coach almost every position on the field. You know, even the quarterbacks for that matter, if you have a holder or if one of them can punt or kick, you know, it's a unique situation that I think special teams are coaches that are in the CFL, because you're really able to take control of that meeting room and teach them the game for guys that one have maybe have understand it and seen it, you know, as they're growing up. But for the guys that have never seen the stuff, the motion, the onside man rules, tapping a ball out of bounds while you keep, you know, your body in bounds, you know, all those crazy things, the halo that they have no idea on. It's fun for me. I love talking about it and I love teaching it. And then the technique stuff, you know, it's just, you're able to get, you know, you're able to get better as a coach, but you're also able to make these guys a better player just because you're coaching them. And then you're learning yourself, you know, seeing them, and then you realize, hey, you know, I can switch this up and you know, work this technique now with it. So, you know, it is a unique position. I love it. And I love and enjoy coaching these guys about, you know, about the Canadian football game.
Well, Nate went through this as a rookie, and a lot of rookies get their opportunity to get the feet wet by contributing on special teams. And guys in their second or third year, Mensah and Hoyt and Kassar and Haggerty and Calver. And then you got the new guys like Adam Aboye or Penny Laye who are trying to get their feet wet. And then you look up, and there's Winton McManus. And, you know, the guy is arguably the best defensive player in the CFL. If he's not, he certainly is in the conversation. What does it mean to you as a coach to see a guy like that not diva it up and say, hey, I'm tired, man. I just I'm making eight tackles a game. I need the break. But the first guy down there a lot of the times is your best player.
Yeah, you know, Winton is one special player. He really is. He is a guy who will not come off the field unless I pull him off. He will never ask for a playoff. If I realize that we're in a game situation and we're taking more defensive reps than normal, I will make a switch for him. I don't think he cares for it too much, but at the same time, I think he appreciates it and knowing, but the guy will never take a playoff. I love his energy. I love his effort. His determination to be great is what is so impressive about him. And he's such a true aspiration for these younger guys that want to be, you know, not just a starter, but still play on special teams, because it's not easy to do. You know, to be able to play on special teams and be, as you said, that arguably probably the best defensive player for sure in the CFL. The way he's been playing, the way he comes downhill, the way he strikes players. You know, and it's day in and day out. It's not just every now and then. And just like you said, on special teams, he's our, you know, he's tied for in our team for leading tackles on special teams. So, you know, there's a lot to be said about Whit McManus. He is a special breed who truly cares about doing well, being a leader, and winning.
Coach, last one for me. How excited are you to have a guy like Javon Leak back there returning kicks and punts? Because, you know, I've noticed the last couple of years, you know, the return game has needed some pop. And you can't have that pop unless you've got a guy back there with juice like he does, right? We saw it in the preseason game. He's got some giddy up to him. His running style is explosive. How excited are you to have a guy like that back there?
You know, I'm really enjoying Leak. He is, you know, he comes out every day, and anything I ask him to do, if we're catching, you know, 50 punts a day, the man is out there doing it. He's a worker. I love his energy. He gets vertical when he catches the ball, and he has a different style of running to him. You know, he is explosive. He has some power behind it, and he's able to make guys miss, you know, with not much room. If you notice last game, that, you know, that return that he had for 17 yards on a punt return, you know, he only had about 3 yards to work with, you know, before he ran out of real estate, and he still got another 10 after it, you know, just by making, you know, one guy got, you know, miss him on an arm tackle. But he, I enjoy him. I love the way he runs. I love the power he brings when he's getting vertical and he's able to break the arm tackles. And it's hard to find those returners out there. You know, he's a very unique returner. And I'm looking forward to working with him more and more and seeing what he can do.
Final question, ended on a light note. CNE is underway right now. Let's say the coaching staff decides to go out and hit the midway at the same time. And you've got all of those games. You got the football toss and the basketball throw and the throw the ring around the bottle and all of that stuff. Which member of the current coaching staff is coming back with the most stuffed animals?
Gotta be RD.
Don't suck up to the head guy. No,
the quarterback's always got the hand back coordination.
Yeah, you know, maybe I'll go with Kevin Ivan.
Why?
Kevin what's Ivan, you know, got? I like to call him Mr. Consistent. Because earlier in the season, we'd be working with our returners catching punts, and Ivan is back there catching punts with our guys, just having fun, and he hasn't dropped one all year.
Oh yeah.
And I always call him Mr. Consistent. You know, he's always back there. He's catching the punt. He's not dropping them, and he's always consistent at what he's doing. So I'd probably have to give it to Kevin.
He's also pregame. He's out there with Reinhardt.
Yeah,
he's your holder for left footers.
He is.
If you ever have to use a left footer, he's your guy.
He's the guy. No, you're right. You know, I can see Ivan doing, you know, having a blast just like a little kid and winning all those stuffies and bringing them back.
Coach, appreciate this. This was a lot of fun. Go get Hamilton on Friday night, and thanks so much for doing this.
Yeah, thank you, guys. I really enjoyed it. really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Coach. Good night.
Good night. Take care. Thank you again.
Well, there was Mickey Donovan, and we had Devaris Daniels before that. So, Mr. Ajay, those were fun. Those, like, we say that every week because we have so many good characters on this team. And I think it's good to learn about the people behind either the uniform or the headsets. I know you know Devaris exceptionally well. You've never met Mickey. What did you learn from him, the person?
I just learned that the man loves football and he loves connecting with the people in football. And that's always cool. I wish, you know, some of the best coaches that I've had in my career were exactly like him, right? They love the game of football a lot, but they also love the people in football. And we were talking about this before. It's like, there's so many interesting people and the relationship is kind of, it's what it's all about. Like all my best memories from playing football are the relationships, like being a kid, my best friend, Chris Rossetti, met him through football. He's still my best friend to this day, right? And even in college, some of my very best friends still connected with them. And it's just the relationships. I don't even remember the games that much, but I remember, you know, things before the game, going out after the game, and everything in between. So Mickey's that kind of guy. That was my big takeaway. The man loves football and the man loves people in football. So quality individual, you can't have enough of those.
I will say, though, I know Rossetti's your guy, but he's like the head of pro scouting now for the Giants. As an Eagles fan, if you cheer for the Giants, I'll throw you out of the damn booth. Like, you're out. Like, can't
he's
have
sending
that.
He's sending me some Giants gear. I will make sure I don't wear it around you.
Oh, my. No. Like, it's tough because, you know, when he was in Miami, that's a perfect spot for him.
Yeah,
because he's in the AFC, and I can go. Yeah, go Dolphins. This right. is great. Curtis Ruckavina, another former. He's in Buffalo. You know, okay, fine. I don't have to worry about him in the NFC East.
Yeah.
Oh man, it
sucks. I know. I mean, yeah. I realize Eagles fans are probably the most passionate fans I've ever met. I got a couple other friends that are Eagles fans. Like, you guys live and die by your team, and there's other fan bases that are pretty serious, but Eagles fans, man, oh my goodness, it's a different breed. You guys are
all I know is that after watching the two exhibition games, especially the first exhibition game, I have declared the NFL season over and the Eagles are Super Bowl champions.
You guys look good. You guys, I watched the second preseason game. Like on the line, offensive and defensive line, you're going to win a lot of games just off of line play.
Cam Jurgens, the rookie center, this is the Eagles fan. We're talking about interior line play with second round draft picks and breaking it down in minutia.
Right,
play is just fantastic.
He was that good, though. I'll give him up. Was that good.
Let's talk about the Argos now in minutia. How much can you do differently getting ready for Hamilton this week because you played him twice in the last 3 weeks? Like, how many new wrinkles can you add?
You know, what really coaches are doing now? They're going, taking the plays from last week, the plays that Hamilton is studying, figuring out how Hamilton would play that based on how they did in the past, then coming up with wrinkles off that. So it's just the ultimate chess match. Obviously, there's new personnel with the Argos, with Javon and AJ. And we saw last week how Coach Dinwiddie used both of them in the backfield at times at the same in the game at the same time, and having AJ and Javon be able to catch passes out the backfield is going to be huge.
This is White and Foster from a year ago, isn't it?
I
and the same kind of that. Downhill runner, the same kind of, you know, guy who's probably would be more effective in space or off, you know, off the edge. It's almost like, you know, oh, White is gone. Oh, here's Olette. Oh, you know, DJ's gone.
Yeah.
Hey, okay, Javon, go ahead. Yeah. And you can go back to doing stuff that you did a year ago that was successful.
Yeah, creating mismatches. That's what football is all about, creating mismatches. And, you know, we talked about it on the broadcast. I mean, Javon and AJ are in the game. By the time the defense is counting, oh, there's a receiver missing. Oh, AJ's here. Oh, Javon's running past me in a route. So just creating mismatches, creating confusion with the defense. And in my opinion, I think Coach Dinwiddie kind of likes having to, you know, just move people around, find different ways to get guys open, like the two running back system. He kind of likes that because he gets to be a coach. He gets to design things. And that first half, it was working pretty well. Now it's about the second half, and that we're going to harp on it, but you've got it. It's got to be, I said it before the last game, it's got to be a full 60-minute game. And we haven't had the last two. Hamilton is an important one that we have to have.
Well, so, you know, this would be the week. And, you know, after losing two in a row, especially, instead of one offensive touchdown and four field goals, four offensive touchdowns and one field goal. You know, that's the way to silence the critics.
Yep.
Is to give them something else to talk about. And if it's been short yardage, start finishing off on second and one and third and one, second and two, you know, go from seventh up the chart and become second in the league like you are in the longer down and distances on second down. Finish off drives with sixes instead of threes.
Yeah.
Like that's the only way to call off the dogs. You know, and Dinwiddie is a guy who is obviously a creative guy, and now is just syncing up the right play at the right time. Because the plays are in the playbook.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like there's only so many routes you can run. The route tree is the same for every player on every team in the CFL.
The playbooks are pretty much the same for most teams. It's just when you're calling the plays and how you're setting stuff up.
And that's, you know, we've seen Dinwiddie do that very successfully. And now it's just finishing it off, whether it's scheme, whether it's execution, whatever it is. You know, I'm not sitting there in the film session and knowing what the play is. Why did it break down? Why was it not successful? The problem is right now it's not. And we know the personnel is there. You know, there are several guys who can be targets in the red zone. And with a couple of different backs now giving you a different option to spread things out a little bit, especially since we've seen both guys can catch the ball and catch the ball wide out toward the numbers. There are so many things, and, you know, they took advantage of that when Calgary dropped off. There's AJ, you know, catching the ball at the line of scrimmage with 15 yards between him and the closest guy. The plays are there. It's just kind of getting everything in sync. And, you know, now we're at the midway point of the season, and, you know, they say the season starts at Labor Day. So, this is far from a preseason game. But it's you know, it's the second half of the season. They're 9 out of 18 in the books, and the next four games, two against Hamilton, home and away, and then away and away against Ottawa. Just when you think the schedule couldn't get any dumber, it does. But you know, these are four games. This is a statement. You know, you can't come out of this less than 2-2. You want to come out of this minimum 3-1 and you hope to roll the table, but the most important game, you can't roll the table if you don't win on Friday night. I know that's a cliche, but everything has to be focused on this game, this rivalry, this team that you can get a little bit of space between. You win the next two, you're 6 points up and they're running out of games.
Absolutely. It's they're all there for the taking. I mean, tied for first place after losing two in a row. The East has been, you know, incredibly tight all year long, right? So, you know, you put a good stretch of games together at this point, I mean, you could very well run away with this thing. But, you know, like, it's a cliche for a reason. You said it's one game at a time, but it's a cliche for a reason because it is what it is. And I just used another cliche to explain a cliche. But no, but that's how you have to look at it. You can't be looking at the entire schedule. Focus on this game. Play your hardest. You treat this like a playoff game. And then worry about the next – the rest of the season. And for the most part, teams do that, right? There's only one game a week. You know, you're putting out your best game plans each week, the game plans you feel are most successful to get the job done each week. And then you roll from there and make adjustments. But it's Hamilton again, the third time in four games. And you know them, they know you. They're coming to Toronto. And, you know, McLeod Bethune-Thompson is a better quarterback at home, his record says. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's time. It's not always on one guy, and football is the ultimate team game, but this is his opportunity, right? This is his year. He's the number one guy from start to finish. He gets a lot of heat. It's not all on him. We see what happens up front, and sometimes when balls are there, they're dropped. It's not on one guy. He can play better, though. He'll tell you he can play better. And I think he needs to put this, you know, this team on his shoulders. And you know, there's no Andrew Harris. It's time for him to just let it go, be more aggressive. Don't play scared. And I'm not saying he has been playing scared, but just, you know,
be Mac
we love. And you know, I love him going to Temple, but just get back to being Mac. Then that'll be good enough, more than good enough.
Well, the team that's coming down or up, I guess the QEW is 0-5 on the road this year. And, you know, they're looking for a road win. They can, you know, get back even with the Argos with a win. Argos can put some separation there. Fans have been great. Thank you for coming to the games and making noise. It's a loud building. And with a few more fans in there, it's going to get even louder. And we assume it'll be tough for the Hamilton fans to get down on Friday. So it's a chance to make it even more of a home field advantage on Friday night. And don't forget, you buy a ticket to the Argo game. You can come to the CNE earlier that day. You can hang around afterwards and hit some of the rides at night when the lights are pretty cool. It's a neat experience. A lot of fans. You can see the jerseys walking around the midway before and after the game on last Saturday night. So we'll dial it up again, TSN 1050. 7 o'clock will be the pregame show. 7:30 will be the kickoff on TSN 1050. Anything you want to say in closing?
No, just come out, enjoy the CNE. I mean, it's a rare night where you can get the best of both worlds. Great entertainment from the football game, and either you come before and after, but the CNE is there as well. It's one of the best nights in Toronto for entertainment. Take advantage. I mean, you buy a ticket, you get a ticket to the CNE right there. So take advantage. We want to see you here. Make our home field an advantage. So, no, that's it for me. And, you know, before the games, my favorite thing is walking in from the go and seeing all the jerseys, right? I make a note of, you know, there's a Dury jersey here. There's an Owens. There's always a bunch of pinball jerseys. There's Flutie jerseys. I just love seeing that. So let's make it a more norm. Bring people with you, like, you know, invite someone, bring a friend. And I think that's the best way to get this, our home crowd, better.
And if for whatever reason you can't make the CNE on Friday night, Thursday at 11:30, we're holding an open practice at BMO Field. The guys will be out there. It'll be a walkthrough. So it's not going to be, you know, a lengthy thing, but we'll have some stuff going on, some giveaways. Sean Bowen will be interviewing some people. I'll be interviewing some people and kind of explaining what they're going to be doing on the field. So, you know, if you go early in the morning and just want to take a break and sit down and bring your incredibly healthy CNE food to sit down and have a bite and watch practice. Would love to have you out there. That'll be fun. But would even more so, would love to see you there on Friday night as the Argos take on the Ticats. So that'll do it for us. For Natea, I'm Mike. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll do it again next week with another version of Cover 2.